Welcome to Ask the Doulas. I am Alyssa Veniklos. I am here with Courtney and Katie today. So Courtney is with Building Blocks Therapy Services, and Dr. Katie is Pediatric Dental Specialist of West Michigan. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
So I wanted to get you two together because I've talked specifically with Katie before about pediatric dental, you know, topics, and then with Courtney about speech therapy. I'm like, they both have to do with mouths. So yes. I figured we would have a lot to talk about together.
Absolutely.
So it sounds to me like in the dental office, you often are the one who sees these, I don't know, signs of maybe speech delays before parents even understand that their child has a speech delay at 1, 2, 3 years old.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
They don't see Courtney or call Courtney because they don't even know there's a problem yet.
Totally.
So how does that work? What does
that
look like?
Well, you know, obviously on a day-to-day basis, I'm seeing so many kids of all ages, and I have these interactions with kids, and I can have a sense of, you know, there's a wide range of normal and development, and I can kind of anticipate and see when maybe there might be something arising, but also a lot of any speech development issues I see really has a lot to do with their anatomy. So that's what I'm evaluating as well, whether it's tonsils. Some kids have tongue ties or other ties in their mouth that can cause some issues with speech, and you know, other things I'm evaluating as well that I find that I really need help from a speech pathologist, actually. And that's where you come in as well.
Well, yeah, and I also have parents who are constantly asking me regarding any speech delays, you know, could this be a dentition problem? Could this have anything to do with their oral cavity? So I think that a lot of times that, you know, those, we kind of, you know, cross paths.
Absolutely. So what about like somebody who's maybe a kid who, is it called an oral aversion if they don't really like certain types of foods or maybe textures of foods? Let's say I have a client, let's say I'm working with a sleep client and this kid's two, won't eat much, doesn't like certain types of foods. Is that a dental issue? Is it a speech therapy issue? Is it both?
It can often be both issues. I mean, I will see a lot of kids come in, you know, especially kids are always going to be picky.
Yes.
And that is totally normal.
Especially at that age. Right?
What's interesting is research has shown that a kid needs to try a food 20 times before they will actually like it, because you have to train your taste buds. So with anything, you know, your taste buds are actually learning how to like foods. And obviously there's some foods that come easier than others, like sugar, that just, you know, that has other effects on our brain that we're just going to like it immediately. Something like broccoli, yes, some kids are not going to like that right away. And there's absolutely a chemical reason why. The problem arises when I am talking to a family and mom is at a loss for, you know, he will only eat three foods. And I see this often, you know, that he will only eat bread, hot dogs, and crackers. That's not normal, I will say. And there's a lot of reasons that could be going on. Obviously, it could be so many things. It could be stressors in the home. It could be that he has some anatomical reason. Or it could be that he has a lot of tooth decay and he has a lot of pain in his mouth.
Yes.
And he is very smart. Kids are very resilient, very, very smart. That child knows exactly what he can eat that doesn't cause him pain when he eats. Quite often, though, you know, there is something anatomically going on, whether it's really large tonsils, especially in that like 2 to 6 range, their tonsils can be quite large, and that can cause some, you know, obviously swallowing issues.
Yes.
And I'm sure you can touch on that a little bit more. But also, what I'll notice quite often that goes missed a lot is if a child has a tongue tie. So what that means, a lot of people don't even know what a tongue tie means. Basically, our tongues have a tissue attachment to the area, you know, the bottom of the floor of our mouth, it's called. And sometimes that area of tissue is quite pronounced, a little bit too strong, and there's too much attachment with the muscle fibers to the tongue and the floor of the mouth. And that can impact how well the tongue moves And if the tongue is really restricted and cannot move very well, then they cannot manipulate food very well either in order to actually...
Yeah, you don't realize how much you move your tongue around, right?
Absolutely. You know, the tongue is one of the strongest muscles in our body, and if you can't use it properly, it's going to be really hard for them to manipulate food around their mouth, chew the food, and thus swallow the food as well. So I don't know if you want to touch more on your experience with that as well.
Yeah, so as we eat, our tongue, it has to have a significant amount of, like, range of motion to it. So especially if that tongue is tied in, we have to be able to actually initiate the swell. We have to be able to push our tongue up against the roof of our mouth to be able to create the suction, to be able to get all the food to actually go down into our esophagus. But also along with that, when you're looking at different textures of food, you have to be able to manipulate it in your mouth. So if it's going into your cheeks, if it's getting stuck around your teeth, you have to be able to do tongue sweeps or to be able to angle your tongue to be able to move all the food towards the center of your tongue. So if there's not that range of motion in there, then it's going to be really hard for them to use different textures of food. So as a speech therapist, a lot of the times when a parent will say, oh, they're really picky, is I look at the pattern of textures and what is required for the mouth, the tongue, the cheeks, and everything to do to manipulate that. And am I noticing a pattern with this that wow, they really don't like those liquids because maybe they can't control it. Maybe it's coming out of their lips or, you know, that bread, when you're chewing the bread and crackers, they tend to, that sticks together, called the bolus, and it sticks together. So they don't have to manipulate that tongue as much. And so you start to look at all of that in their structure.
Yeah, and with that kind of restricted diet they have, it can trickle down and cause a lot of tooth decay, because obviously those things that are much easier for them to eat and manipulate are going to be those carbohydrates that can easily cause cavities. So a lot of times there is a lot of that simultaneous going on, you know, where they are having trouble manipulating foods. And then I see a lot of dental decay as well, a lot of cavities going on, because one aspect as well, if, you know, they don't have a lot of range of motion with their tongue, then they can't self-cleanse their mouth either. So now that I'm going to talk to you about this, you're probably going to notice how often you're, you know, wiping your teeth with your tongue, moving your tongue to your
cheek. I never knew that was called self-cleansing. So every time you wipe your tongue over your teeth, you're
you're essentially...
She's doing it too.
Exactly. You know, and it's just something we don't even think about. It's a natural reaction, because it's not normal to have, you know, pockets of food in your mouth and things like that. And that's something I even see a lot with kids coming in. I'll see that they have actually, it's called food pocketing, where there's actually food stuck in their cheeks and the vestibules of their cheeks.
That's what I was just imagining, visualizing in my head, that if a kid had a tongue tie and isn't able to move their tongue over to the side, like if I have... you know, if something's stuck down here, I can pop it out with my tongue. So if they can't get that out, it's just going to sit there, which is going to smell and cause tooth decay and, I don't know, make it difficult to... I wouldn't want to eat very much either.
No,
if I knew it was going to get stuck down there.
You're going to know what works for you and want to just stick to that.
Exactly. Interesting. So what other kinds of things do you see that might be speech-related? Or is that the biggest one?
I mean, that's the biggest one. A lot of it, too, is how you were talking about with their orthodontic occlusion. So how teeth are biting together. One thing that can definitely impact speech is, you know, how your jaws are growing, how your front teeth are overlapping or not in the front as well. A lot of kids who have had a pacifier longer, like past age 3, have a finger sucking or a thumb sucking habit. Even kiddos who have used a sippy cup for an extended period of time. Those can be things that can cause what we call an open bite, meaning your front teeth don't overlap. And they often have what's called a large overjet, meaning your front teeth are not overlapping how they should. They're very, from your top teeth to your bottom teeth, there's a very wide gap between them. So that I know can cause some speech issues as well, because your tongue isn't really able to, you know, place where it should be properly.
Yes.
On those front teeth, right?
Yeah, so our speech sounds are all how we manipulate that airflow. And mm-hmm. we manipulate that airflow with our tongue and with our cheeks. And so where we place our tongue, there's a lot of times we're doing it just behind those front teeth or against our front teeth. And so that can... And then there's more behind their scenes. There's so many muscles in the tongue. But it can really... There's different areas that then the air can sneak out. So then you don't have those quality speech sounds.
So do you teach people to... Or kid, because you do pediatric. Do you teach children to move their tongue differently? How do you...
Well, I'm trying to think. There's a kid that I have right now that she tends to jut her lower jaw when she does her SH sound. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of kids have trouble moving their jaw separate from their tongue, separate mm-hmm. from, you know, this disassociation between all these mm-hmm. different parts of the mouth. And so we're having to, I mean, we're talking centimeters at a time, fine tune where that tongue is and where that jaw is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so we have to, everybody speaks in their own way and produces their sounds in their own way, but what sounds the most acceptable, you
right.
know, to
That's
those who are listening.
Yes.
And so yeah, it's being able to kind of manipulate exactly where that tongue is
okay.
and all of that.
Yeah, and that's something, too, where, you know, if you're noticing you have patients with, you know, having those types of difficulties, you know, definitely touching base with them, you know, have you been able to see a dentist?
Mm-hmm.
Have they talked to you about seeing an orthodontist at all, you know, and just kind of gauging if they have any history with that as well,
yeah.
because that's something that... You know, we wouldn't want to go missed either. If that's something that can help them, we would want to do that.
Well,
for
exactly.
sure.
You know, those kids have like the palate expanders and
yeah, exactly. You know, even how you're talking about how her lower jaw is moving forward like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, that could be something to do with how her front teeth actually occlude. You know, it could have something to do with even her, you know, TMJ and things
mm-hmm.
like that as well. Even something as much as our tonsils, how big our tonsils are actually affect our jaw growth as well. You know, if our tonsils are really large, our jaw growth and the rest of our anatomy finds a way to compensate so they can breathe.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting as well. You know, and there's definitely physical signs we look for that can coincide with large tonsils, especially if it's something that's kind of gone missed for a longer period of time. A lot of kids who I see, you know, for the first time coming in, even yeah, 7 to 9 range, at that point, you can really see some changes in their jaw development with especially their upper jaw. They'll develop a really, really high palate because that's, again, it's trying to open up their airway so that they can breathe better. I mean, a telltale sign, obviously, it's, you know, kids with ADHD and all of that as well. Anytime I hear that in a medical history, I beeline for looking at the tonsils. Because if kids are not getting the sleep they need, it comes out during the day. Because when you don't get enough sleep, you are going to be more hyperactive. That's how our brains work. So that's how sometimes it can affect how they act during the day, unfortunately. And there is oftentimes I'm seeing kids a little bit older and I see that going on and, you know, they have tonsils that are almost touching in the back mm-hmm. of their throats, and that's very abnormal and not healthy for them.
So is that a form of sleep apnea?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sleep apnea is really interesting because there's so many things, so many symptoms. A kid won't have necessarily all the symptoms. They may only have one, and a lot of it could be their body actually compensating it as it grows to make sure that it's avoiding some of those symptoms as well.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously a kid who snores a lot, bedwetting is one, you know, so many things where, you know, obviously the hyperactivity during the day, or just, you know, generally their sleep cycle is off and they're waking up at night, things like that, are all signs that we're, you know, evaluating. And sometimes even I'll still have them see an ENT, even when I'm like, well, the tonsils are not, you know, so pronounced, but just in case, like, every body is so different, mm-hmm. and how your body reacts to whatever is going on is going to be totally unique for your body. So obviously there's a very, you know, less than, we say, 30% occlusion of your tonsils. That's pretty normal, but anything more than that could be causing an issue.
I love that you're asking about sleep.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I'm like obsessed.
Yes,
with sleep,
exactly. I love that you are.
That's my jam.
That's like such a huge thing for us. And, you know, that's part of the, honestly, like going to see a pediatric dentist, we are looking at so many different things because all of that goes into how a child develops.
Yes.
So we are, you know, we have so much training on just child development in general, physically mm-hmm. and emotionally and all of that. So we are evaluating all of those things to make sure nothing is going miss, because things can, unfortunately. So definitely, you know, pediatric dentists, we have more school we go through to be able to learn those things, thankfully. Mm-hmm. Not that general dentists don't either. It's just, you know, sometimes you do have to seek out extra training as you graduate, and it just kind of depends on what opportunities you find and learn and all of that as well. I mean, since I've graduated from residency, I've had to seek out meeting, you know, other speech therapists and pathologists to learn more, you know, and obviously training on lip and tongue ties and the procedure to help relieve that for kids. So that's something that, you know, we can work together on as well, because I can use a laser to actually do a phrenectomy, which means we can remove that extra tissue that is causing that tongue tie, that can give a child so much more mobility and relief. But even when we do that procedure, kids will still need therapy afterwards. You know, it's not the procedure is part of the spectrum of, you know, working together to make sure that child is able to function at their best.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think that, you know, especially children, their bodies adapt mm-hmm. amazingly.
Yes.
And they compensate so well. And so many things can go hidden with a child mm-hmm. because their bodies just automatically do these amazing things.
Yes.
And I think when I do a very similar thing where I really look, how are they functioning in their whole, like, their world? Mm-hmm. Like, looking at the whole child and ADHD and whatnot. Wow, like, okay, so you're saying that this child is really acting out at school. Well, let's look at these patterns of behavior, sleep, mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm. It always seems to be around writing time, and we know that they have a little bit of difficulty with that endurance of those things.
That's great.
And really looking at the whole picture and not just honing in, I'm just a dentist, and,
yes.
you know, I'm thinking about the teeth, or I'm a speech pathologist looking at just communication. It's
mm-hmm.
it's how is everything interacting together in the world, because, gosh, kids, they adapt amazingly.
I mean, I say this all the time. Kids are so resilient.
Yes.
So they're so fascinating how they can grow and change to make the best of what they are given.
Yeah.
You know, and so many situations where I'm always fascinated that they've been able to cope for this long in whatever situation it is,
mm-hmm.
and that they're doing really well, but I know they can do better, you know?
Mm-hmm. I have a tongue tie question, because
yeah.
in my world as a doula, it often relates to newborns.
Yes, absolutely.
But do you see, you know, a 10-year-old kid, or maybe that's too old, maybe a 5-year-old who still isn't eating well, 10-year-olds too? Can you do a tongue tie?
So I actually had a 13-year-old patient.
Okay.
She came to see me, and because she was having tooth pain, and, you know, she needed definitely a deeper filling fix and all that. Great girl, but, like, very, very just generally anxious. You know, a typical 13-year-old, but a little bit more farther on the, you know, spectrum of just having a little bit of social anxiety and things like that as well. And I noticed that she had a really severe tongue tie. And I just asked, you know, because she's having this tooth decay, and like I said, you know, a tongue tie can cause, you know, impact the development of tooth decay as well. And I just asked mom, I said, you know, I'm noticing she has a really tight connection between her tongue and the rest of her mouth. And have you guys ever had any issues with, like, eating, speech, anything like that at all? You know, asking those questions, because I don't want to miss anything as a dentist as well. I'm not just looking at her tooth. And mom goes, oh, yeah, actually, she used to be in speech therapy for a while. They weren't really making a lot of progress.
So the speech therapist wasn't looking at tongue tie.
Yeah. And
he's over here dying.
So then I'm the crazy lady who comes in for this 13-year-old, and all of a sudden she has a tongue tie. Oh. But, and then mom, we start talking a little bit more, and, you know, even she starts chiming in. She was not saying a word until this moment. She's like, yeah, it's really hard for me to eat.
13 years.
And I was like, oh my gosh, poor girl. And I could just see, like, it was really starting to, like, emotionally affect her. You could tell. So I did say, you know, they didn't end up coming back to the office I was at the time. But they were really relieved when they heard that there could be some other solution as well. You know, and I talked to her and I was like, I really want you to go, you know, I would like you to get another referral for a speech pathologist. I want you to talk to them about the fact that your pediatric dentist noticed she has a tongue tie, and that we do a really simple procedure to give her some more mobility with her tongue, but she will likely need some therapy afterwards as well. So they did, mom called me back, and she had made an appointment with, you know, one of the Spectrum facilities, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm not sure what, actually moved offices, so I'm not sure what happened with it. I'm sure she got the treatment.
So without an actual revision done, mm-hmm. you can help if they, let's say somebody's like, I don't want to have the phrenectomy, like,
right,
don't want to do it, yeah. too scary, or I'm 13, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Can you actually help?
I mean,
or is it limited because there's only so much you can do?
It would be limited because she probably has already figured out her range of motion,
right.
and probably put it to the max, and mm-hmm. so at that point, structurally, there's not much manipulation. You know, speech therapists, we can't change structure.
Yes, exactly.
And so we have to use the structure that we have, and I'm going to trust in all my ability that that girl probably already utilized what she had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But,
you know, that's why sometimes you do need to have that physical change in order to be able to mm-hmm. progress in that therapy. And she clearly had not progressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and especially. I think that's why they stopped going to therapy, because at that point, what are you supposed to do? So that was just kind of an unfortunate case where it really could have, something could have been done way early on mm-hmm. because she had clearly been having speech issues. And honestly, at the time, her speech seemed great. Okay. And I was like much more concerned about the fact that she was like, she's even said, it's hard for me to eat.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking the 13-year-old going to a pizza party, and she's probably dreading it because it's really hard to eat and swallow. And
yeah, right. Exactly. So, and especially at that age, you know, your social life is really dramatically impacted with things like that, mm-hmm. you know, and that starts really as soon as kids start school, but mm-hmm. when they start really noticing differences between each other, and that's huge as a 13-year-old to have gone that long and be struggling. On a more happy note, I've had, you know, a 9-year-old patient recently, and he had been in speech therapy, wasn't progressing. I spoke with his speech pathologist, and she said, oh yeah, like, just give it a try, you know, do the laser phrenectomy. And I did, and he even said, I felt better talking that same day.
Wow.
Yes.
That's so great to hear.
So that was really cool. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. And mom was like so ecstatic that, you know, they could finally like progress a little bit more
yeah.
in their treatment. So, you know, and it's one of those things too, you know, usually when we're doing a laser phrenectomy, we remove some of that tissue, and the kids do great, honestly. That you're a little bit sore for a couple days. But generally, you know, they can still function normally.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they need a little bit of ibuprofen or Tylenol for some older kids, but generally it's easy recovery, which is awesome, you know, and every kid is different with their recovery. Some
yes.
kids it's harder, some kids just bounce back the same day. So, but generally it's, kids do really, really well.
When they
it's
need
awesome.
Therapy afterwards, is that something you give? You know what I mean? After a revision?
It depends, right?
It depends.
Yeah.
So speech therapy, we work on that musculature in
okay.
the mouth. And so, you know, if we're needing to work on some range of motion, you know, exercises with them, but also with that new freedom that they have with their tongue, suddenly those sounds might be coming out different
mm-hmm.
and they might not know how to manipulate things right mm-hmm. away. And so providing a hierarchy and all of that, and working through them on being able to manipulate the airflow a little differently.
Yeah, that's a weird thought too, being mm-hmm. a 9-year-old who you've been speaking for 8 of these 9 years, mm-hmm. and suddenly your tongue moves completely differently and you're saying sounds different. How weird that must sound and feel.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, it is cool, you know, especially because I'm doing these phrenectomies from, you know, basically birth till whenever they still need them. But it's really awesome to see when an older kid can actually explain to you how it did affect them in a positive way, you know, so that's really cool. Obviously, you know, for kids who are really, really little, I can still see it in a physical way, how much better they're doing, whether it's breastfeeding.
I was going to say with that.
Mom says they're eating the foods, yes. You know, and even, you know, just I do like lip tie releases as well, and just how much easier it is for parents to brush at home. Mm-hmm. So that's something, you know, with occupational therapy as well, having oral aversions, if you have like really tight lip tie, it's a lip tie, then it's really hard to brush that area because it actually does hurt because your lip is being pulled so tightly against your teeth that it's really difficult to brush that area. So that's always something I'm looking for as well when, you know, I'm in, you know, in a patient's mouth, moving their, you know, soft tissue around. And you can tell when a kid's like, that didn't feel good, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then, you know, I can see what the tissue is doing inside the mouth to tell, like, that's a little too tight right there. I can tell that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, you know, on top of that, having a parent trying to brush their teeth, you know, obviously for, you know, a 2-year-old, it's already still really difficult to brush their teeth sometimes, but having that on top of it, you know, generally I say you are not hurting your child by brushing their teeth. So if they're crying, that's okay, you know, and we give them ways to work through it. But that is something where, yes, that doesn't feel good, you know, so that's hard as a parent as well. But it's good that we can observe that and give the child some relief and give mom and dad a little bit of relief as well, you know.
Well, I think it's amazing to have these resources for parents where they know that you, like, people like you are working together.
Yes.
To where you're not just looking at a tooth. You're not just looking at the sounds a kid makes,
exactly.
That it's all connected.
And we all need to work together,
Yes, absolutely.
So each of you tell us where our clients can find you and our listeners can find you if they have questions or, you know, they need a new pediatric dentist or they want to have some speech therapy, where would they find
you? Yeah, so, and we are a new office at East Paris and Burton in the Bankston Center. So we will be open on March 11th, but we're taking new patients right now. You can email us at smile@pdsofwestmi.com. You can also find us on the website, pdsofwestmi.com. Otherwise, you can give us a call at 616-608-8898. And
Perfect.
We're happy to help you. Yeah.
And Building Blocks Therapy Services, I'm off at Alpine, right across from the Weather Ball, as a good landmark. I have a website, buildingblocksgr.com, or you can give me a call at 616-666-6396.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you, ladies, for joining us today.
Yay, thanks for having
us. Thank you.
So fun.
As always, you can find our podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud, and go to our website, goldcoastdoulas.com, and we are on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening.